Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of KCBX and its program hosts. Today, host Mario Espinosa-Kulik and his guests will discuss the upcoming SLO International Film Festival. We'll speak with organizers and one of the filmmakers from the festival as well. Our program is recorded today, so we cannot take your calls. However, if you do have follow-up questions, you can always email them to voices@kcbx.org. Right now, let's join Mario and his guests. Over to you, Mario.
Thanks, Brad. Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. My name is Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today, we're talking about the 31st Annual San Luis Obispo International Film Festival. It's coming up on April 24th to the 29th, with an encore week extending the celebration through Cinco de Mayo, or May 5th. This is a beloved event on the Central Coast that brings together independent filmmakers, international storytellers, and engaged local audiences. Joining me in studio today are Sky McLennan, Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival and the SLO Film Center, and Gina Papabase, Producer of Unearth and Impact Producer. Thank you for joining us and welcome to Central Coast Voices.
Thanks.
Great
for
being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yay. So I wanted to start by learning a little bit more about you. And I wanted to start off with Sky, if you want to tell us about your background and how you came to lead the SLO International Film Festival and SLO Film Center.
It's pretty surreal. I grew up in Templeton, actually, and I have always had a passion for film. My dad was an actor, and so I was kind of always around the industry, and I just loved movies. I wanted to make movies, and I also desperately wanted to leave the area, so I did. I lived in San Francisco and Australia, and during that time where I was studying film and also I wanted to meet and network with like-minded folks. So I actually started volunteering at film festivals in San Francisco, and I fell in love with it. And I think it's just this space, the exhibition space, like, is so celebratory, and seeing people connect with film in such a unique and special way, and festivals really highlighting all these different, topics and films that don't often get a platform. So I just fell in love with it, and I started to continue to do it. And I worked at some really big film festivals, Sydney Film Festival and Sundance. And then I moved home temporarily, and I met Wendy, who was running the festival for the last 17 years, and she was looking for a way to transition out of it. And it was like a perfect fit. I wasn't planning to stay for very long, but then I was like, oh my gosh, I get to bring what I love to do back to my hometown, to my community. And so that felt really special. And also with the Palm, I used to go to that theater growing up, and yeah, now I'm running it. So it's pretty surreal.
That's such a full circle moment.
Yeah.
And in terms of your passion for film, how does this manifest into the festival? How's this festival special or stand out from others?
I think SLO has always been a place that it definitely is a small town. And I think the film festival offers a really diverse range of stories and storytelling and voices that we don't hear on a regular basis. And so I think there's an importance to that. And I, even like a small town girl, like growing up in Templeton, film was my portal to the world. It was my portal to new ideas and how people think and feel. And it made me a compassionate and caring and like loving person. And so I think film has that power to do that. And so it feels important, I think, in SLO. Like, you need to see some of these stories.
Yeah, I remember it was like a glimmer of hope during the pandemic and after the pandemic with the comeback to the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just wanted to comment on that, because I think your vision and the work that you all do really does help to inspire not just like art, but social connection.
Exactly, yeah. I think, when times are tough, all we really have is our stories, and film is one medium and a way to express that. So, yeah.
And Gina, what brought you to your role as an impact producer? And if you want to say a little bit more about what that is, for our folks who might not know.
Sure. Yeah. Well, my background is as a filmmaker. So I produce documentary films, but very early on in my career, it was apparent that there was a need for how you translate the message on screen back into the real world. And so an impact producer, simply put, is putting a film to work in service of that mission, making sure that the right people see it, that there's some thought and intention behind what you want people to do as a result of seeing a film, and tracking that to see if it's successful.
And how would somebody become one, or what would you recommend for folks who are exploring different producer roles?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, my best advice to people trying to get into filmmaking is make things. So much of the work is learned on the job. I mean, I did go to film school and I learned a lot there, but I've also learned a lot just by doing. And for somebody especially trying to hone their creative skills as a director or a producer or a cinematographer or an editor, there's no replacement for just the repetition of going through that process on a project. And you learn, I'm still constantly learning things all the time.
Awesome. And Unearth is one of those projects. How did that vision come to life?
Yeah, well, I have collaborated with a filmmaker named John Hunter Nolan for about 12 years now. We met first on a movie called Racing Extinction, which was directed by the Academy Award winner Luis Cejuelas. And we spent many, many days in the field together. And so this is his directorial debut. His career is as a cinematographer, capturing some of the most stunning images I've seen on the film. And so he reached out to me saying, you know, I'm onto this story that I really care about and I'm looking for a producer. Will you help me? The answer was yes. And then here we are about 3 years later. It's been a long journey, but it's really rewarding to actually have a finished film ready to share with audiences.
And it sounds there's like a delicate balance maybe between like having something like a product that's both cinematically and socially powerful. Am I getting that right when it comes to like an impact producer and the stories you're trying to tell?
Yeah, I'd say traditionally in Hollywood, you know, you're trying to create entertainment, and a lot of people who are working in the documentary space, but not exclusively, are also trying to advance some kind of social good. They're on a mission, and they see film as their tool for how to accomplish that. But that delicate balance that you reference is, you know, we still want to be entertained by films. And so it's not enough to just have a good intention or a good issue behind you. You still need to craft a compelling story that has highs and lows and that captivates you on screen. And so that is part of the role of an impact producer during the production of a film is to help balance the creative and the entertainment value, making sure that it's backed up and is factually accurate, but that it's also something that people want to see and want to engage with and want to pick up after they walk out of the theater and do something with. There's that ongoing engagement, and that's really where the impact producer comes in. And I think I'm a bit unusual in that I fill multiple roles, one as a producer of let's just make the film, and then the other as an impact producer of, okay, now let's put the film to work. So I get to wear multiple hats every day.
I appreciate you illuminating a little more about how those roles play out in real life. And I wanted to also ask Sky, in terms of the film festival, how does that come into play when you're like choosing like what stories to highlight?
I think it's this idea, the impact producing, it's kind of new to the documentary space, but it was needed. I think that often you do feel that sense of like, oh my gosh, I just watched this documentary about something, an issue I don't know that much about. I have wisdom about it, but I want to make an impact. I want to take it one step further. And how do I do so? And a lot of these filmmakers aren't necessarily prepared for that or know the like the gravity of the issue that they're exploring. I think also like sometimes filmmakers, they have they don't always have the best interests of their subjects in mind, per se, or thinking about the future of how that film is going to impact their lives and their livelihood. And so I think what Gina's doing now is like having a much more conscious conversation about that. And it's not all the documentaries we have in the festival, but I'm seeing it a lot more and more, and I encourage it. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's really needed. And yeah, you have an audience there that is captive and ready to engage. And yeah, this kind of impact campaign can really make a difference.
I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices, our guests are Skye McLennan, Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival and Slow Film Center, and Gina Papabase, producer of Unearth and Impact Producer. We have been getting to know them a little more and hear about the work that they do. And I would like to say thank you for sharing again. In this next section, I want to focus on what our listeners can expect from this year's program. I'm so interested in hearing how this has all evolved as well. So what should we expect?
I think when we were programming this year, we're definitely mindful of like the current affairs, what's going on in the world. I think people's bandwidth, and I think people have been seeing a lot of sadness, a lot of tragic things, and we wanted to address those things. But I think ultimately, we also wanted to leave people with a sense of hope and resilience. And I think you'll see that within all the films, that even despite, you know, we've got like a film Porcelain War, which is about these artists living on the border of Ukraine. It's a really intense story, but they just have so much hope and passion. And we have a teacher on the other side in Russia who is like secretly sending footage of his classroom. It's called Mr. Nobody Against Putin. And he like risked his life to make this movie. And he has such a sense of humor about it. But he also knows that there's so much weight and power in what he's doing. I think, it's just like all these films are really, I think, will make you feel that way. I hope that you see that, because, yeah, we were very mindful about that. We have a lot of filmmakers coming from all over, actually more than we thought, internationally, who want to come and they want to engage with our audiences. And so that's something I always look forward to, is going beyond just a screening of a film. And yeah, I think things that feel fun and celebratory as well.
And in what ways are folks able to engage with the festival this year?
Yeah, so one thing I introduced a couple of years ago was making individual tickets across all films, because I think film festivals can sometimes feel a little burdensome, or you don't maybe have the free time to watch four films a day and have an all-access pass. And so you can come and see one or two films or as many as you like. The tickets range from like $15 to $12 for students. So we try to keep the cost down. And then as far as filmmakers, we usually have, if they're around for their screenings, they do Q&As after all of the screenings, and they really rely on you to ask audience questions, and you can ask anything you want. Q&As are some of my favorite parts about film festivals. I think it's something really unique and special. And it means a lot to the filmmakers, too. They want to hear what people think of their film.
Yeah. And I feel like it's also a great way for folks to get to know the filmmaker on a different level than most audiences get to.
Exactly. And being slow, I mean, we're a little more casual. I think filmmakers are much more accessible than like at your major festivals. So you can really like talk to them afterwards and share your thoughts. So.
And can you remind us when the festivities begin?
That's a good question. April 24th through the 29th. And then we're doing an encore at the Palm Slow Film Center the following weekend. And yeah, we start off, kick off with our opening night film, DJ Ahmet, at the Fremont Theater, which is a really great feel-good film. Takes place in Macedonia. Yeah. It's really special.
And Gina, I know that you have some connections here in the Central Coast. Do you want to talk a little bit more about your experience as somebody who is having a film celebrated at the festival?
Yeah, I've lived in San Luis Obispo for 10 years now. And being able to bring my work, which, you know, I travel all over the world to capture these stories, and I work from home a lot. So it feels really remarkable for me to be able to share my film back with the community. It feels like a coming home.
And when you look into selecting like places to submit your film to, like what was the draw for the International Film Festival here in San Luis Obispo?
Well, our film it required us to essentially embed with other families for months at a time, and they really opened up their homes to us. And when I thought about you know, how to reciprocate that hospitality, I thought, what better way than to bring the film to my community and to share some of that back to them as well.
Awesome. And I have just a question out of curiosity. I know, like, there are maybe professional terms for the things that I'm curious about, but is there a difference between, like, a screening of a film and a film festival experience?
Yes, I would say, there's just a theatrical run, which is, yeah, just screenings that are happening regularly, playing four times a day at your regular movie theater. And then a film festival screening is a little different in that, yeah, it's been programmed specifically for a short amount of time. It may play once or two or three times at the max usually. And also, yeah, the filmmakers are going to be here potentially. We also, you know, have curated the selection of films as opposed to the movie theater might necessarily be curating per se. At the film center we do, but like other mainstream theaters are just kind of playing what's coming out, mm-hmm. you know? So.
And I know that this year includes also expanded programming at the Slow Film Center. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to hear a little bit more about what the Slow Film Center, like how that, what has that meant to like the local scene here in filming?
It means a lot. I think, you know, we spent a lot of time with Jim D, who is the owner of the building, the Palm Theater. And he was looking for a way to kind of retire and transition out as well. I seem to be following the footsteps of that. And thinking about the longevity of the theater, it's the only independent movie theater in the county currently. And so he actually was one of the founders of founding board members of the film festival. And so it kind of felt like a natural fit. And we brought the theater also under our nonprofit. He was running it as a for-profit theater, which opens us up to more grant opportunities. And I think instilling that the place can stay around for a lot longer. What we're finding is, like, we launched a membership program. We've been doing a lot of different kinds of programming, working with a lot of other nonprofits, also letting them program and use the space. It's been really great. Like, it's bringing communities also into the theater that have never come before. And it's also, I think, really showing to me just the power of film. And we're trying all kinds of weird things. Like we did a crafternoon where we have the lights up and you can like knit while you're watching a movie. We've been showing retrospective screenings that are just like people love or they've never seen before on a big screen. So I really appreciated the response. I think people are engaging with the films in a new way that they never have before. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're all worried about, is like streaming and computers and all that taking over and your home TV essentially being better than coming to the movie theater. And so I'm constantly fighting against that.
Yeah. So, and just as somebody who's just maybe on the outskirts of this, mm-hmm. Observing of like how the Pound Theater has transformed. I mean, I mm-hmm. moved here 2010, and yeah. I was like, this is a great place. I think this is where I saw Carol, actually.
Yeah.
It was just like so unique in that it was inclusive of all identities that you might not see in mainstream theater.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking about like all of the synergy that this is creating in the community organization space.
Yeah.
Because I've seen ads like for Black History Month screenings by Race Matters and I think that was interesting for me.
Yeah, I think it's been important to me that it feels like, I've talked a little bit about this in other ways, that it's like a third space, like it's like your favorite neighborhood bar or restaurant, and that other space, yeah, could be your movie theater. And it's important that the community also gets to program and talk about what they want. So like for tonight, the Diversity Coalition, we reached out to them. They wanted to do what they wanted to do for Cesar Chavez Day, and they wanted to show Dolores. And so we're doing it. Like, so it's like, yeah, I believe in that a lot. So
awesome. We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we will be right back on Central Coast Voices.
Today on KCBX, Latino USA is coming up following this program at 2 o'clock. That's followed by Fresh Air at 3, Marketplace at 4. And then, of course, it's All Things Considered from 4:30 to 6:30, leading to an evening of music that gets underway with Marisa Waddell's The Road Home. Right now, let's return to Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Mario.
Thank you, Brad. Welcome back, everybody, to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. Our guests today are Skye McLennan, Executive Director of the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival and Slow Film Center, and Gina Papabase, Producer of Unearth and Impact Producer. Before we head over to the next session, I wanted to get to know Gina Papabase a little bit more. As a filmmaker, I know you have maybe done more films than just Unearth. So do you want to speak a little bit more on some projects that stand out to you so our guests can get to know you a little better?
Sure, yeah. I started my career as a campaign coordinator on a film called The Cove, which won the Oscar for Best Documentary back in 2010. And that film, I think, was really the proving ground for what an impact producer does. It didn't, you know, that role didn't even have a name back then. But it's truly by living through the day-to-day response that a film can have with audiences that really forged that kind of that roadmap of what to think of ahead of time next time. From there, I co-produced the film Racing Extinction, which is where I met the director of Unearth, Hunter Nolan. That film went on to be nominated for an Oscar as well as an Emmy. And that focused on the mass extinction of species caused by mankind. I worked on the production of that film as well as the impact campaign. And I'm proud to say it also culminated in large-scale architectural building projection events on the United Nations headquarters, the Empire State Building, St. Peter's Basilica at the Vatican, in connection with the movement to protect endangered species. So we really, you know, pun intended, shone a light on these endangered species by projecting them onto major buildings to show people, you know, what we're fighting to protect. And then from there, I co-produced a film that's on Netflix called The Game Changers. That came out in 2019 around perceptions of plant-based eating and sports. And then now I have got on to produce Unearth, which will play at the festival on April 28th, Monday, April 28th at 7:30.
And I appreciate how you described the actionable items that can happen from impact producing. And that was actually how have you seen policy change and things like that? Like, I know we're living in sort of these times of uncertainty where folks are trying to be resilient in a climate that seems to not give so much voice to folks who are experiencing marginalization. But what role do impact producers play in helping to leverage the cinema and art in a way that impacts social change?
Yeah, it's really connecting the dots between the experience of seeing a film and the opportunities that provide leverage for change in the real world. So sometimes that is policy reform. Sometimes that's just a change in public opinion. We call that narrative shift. And sometimes it's people just changing a certain specific behavior in their lives. So those strategies can vary depending on the subject matter. And but some examples of that, I mentioned that I worked on The Cove, that film. Was about the hunting of dolphins that was taking place in Taiji, Japan. But the reason that they were gathering the dolphins was to sell them to aquaria around the world. And that film really contributed to a change in perceptions about marine mammals in captivity. Another example is on Racing Extinction. You know, part of that film documented the illegal wildlife trade. So many species are at risk of extinction because people will buy them for one reason or another. And so through that film campaign, we hosted screenings of the film with policymakers, and it led to actual policy changes around what kinds of species can be imported into the U.S. So with this film, the subject matter that we tackle with Unearth is around specifically the demand for metals and minerals in our system-wide economy, but also it really focuses on the power of community activism, the fact that people at the community level really can come together to fight systemic injustice, and that it can work.
Wow. And do you mind letting us know a little bit more about Unearth now, thinking about location and why folks how folks will resonate with the place and time that you filmed this?
Mm-hmm. The film takes place in Bristol Bay, Alaska, which if you're not familiar with it, it is one of the most pristine wildernesses that we have on planet Earth. And it's also home to the largest sustainable salmon fishery that we have. Half of the world's wild-caught salmon come from this one place. It's also the economic livelihood for fishermen and fisher people, as well as indigenous communities that have lived on that land for thousands and thousands of years. It's also home to the largest ever deposit of golden copper that's ever been discovered in the ground. The amount of metal in the ground is estimated to be worth $500 billion. And so there has been a proposed pebble mine that would go into this ecosystem in Bristol Bay. And this is a fight that's been going on for decades. And the community very overwhelmingly does not want this to go in. And yet the project persists. Every administration, you know, there's a new version of the fight, and you know, the tactics seem to change from the people who stand to profit from this. But ultimately, the community didn't want it, and so they fight back. And we follow two sets of really compelling characters. Two are Native Alaskan Yupik sisters. They live in a town called Igiagig of 70 people, and they live on Lake Iliamna, which is the first place downstream if the mine were to go in. And they are just incredible heroes at the community activism level of what grassroots activism looks like. And it's not by choice. They have no choice but to fight this because it is their way of life that's at stake. And then we also follow two brothers who are salmon fishermen. And their journey is much more broad. They travel across the North American West to understand, you know, if this mine were to go in, what might that look like for them? And so they meet different communities along the way who kind of represent different impacts that mining has on communities. And in that larger journey, we realize this is not unique to Bristol Bay, Alaska. It is a fight that many, many people are experiencing all across the country and all around the world. But it's one that we can't ignore because as we need more solar panels and EV batteries and, you know, everything that we use, our computers, our laptops, even, you know, the fork in your drawer in the kitchen, a lot of these things come from these critical minerals. And so it's less about whether mining should exist or not, but how it should be done, because it's something that we are not able to escape or live without. And so we try to take a nuanced approach to that conversation to acknowledge that, yes, this is something that's going to go on, but how do we do it in a way that's not having those harms? And I'm proud to say that our film has a very inspiring and uplifting ending. It's not all doom and gloom. And again, going back to that promise of hope that activism really can have at the community level. And I'm also proud to say that Erin Brockovich came on as an executive producer to the film for that very reason. She said, you know, the film reminds us of the promise that activism holds in the face of fatigue and disillusionment. And I think that's a story that can be replicated in any number of communities fighting any sorts of injustices. We just have to believe that our actions do matter and that we can make a difference.
Right. And I really appreciate the environmental impact that you're showcasing in that film. And before I get into that, I really wanted to hear more about the Native Alaskan folks that you're working with. As somebody who does work with Indigenous communities here on the Central Coast, I'm wondering if in impact producing and in making this film, what does that look like in terms of a decolonial practice or acknowledging, you know, settler colonial methods of export, like drilling and mining natural resources?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
It's a great question. Sadly, the consistent reality that our characters in this film face, Christina and Alexander Salmon, as well as other Indigenous communities, is that these activities are done without their free and prior informed consent. And that the communities who stand to lose the most also gain the least. And so part of that equation is, you know, Indigenous representation and sovereignty at a whole. There has to be, you know, recognition of people in the land and their rights that are already supposedly afforded to them, but also that they should have. And so our approach to filmmaking with our Indigenous characters was very intentional, so that we as filmmakers were not perpetuating some of those colonial practices that we're here to shine a light on. And so that meant essentially becoming family with them. The filming crew spent months each summer with them, living with them, celebrating their kids' birthdays with them. And Christina and Alexander Salmon became co-executive producers of the film, and very involved in shaping the goals that we're aiming for in the impact campaign.
I really appreciate your focus on building trust with Indigenous creators and Indigenous people in general. I mean, I think that's what we can all hope in this industry, is that representation matters, but also that credit is given to where credit is due.
Right. We need to go beyond representation and actually have meaningful consultation and collaboration.
Exactly. And how do you hope Unearth resonates with audiences here on the Central Coast?
Yeah, well, I've been screening the film, and I should say me and my team of very talented and capable people. We've screened the film in New York, Anchorage, Montana, Boulder, Colorado. We've just finished a screening in Washington, D.C. And I think what's starting to become really clear through those interactions with the audience is that that sense of hope that we document in this particular story can really translate to whatever is going on in your community, and that those community actions really do matter. I think if people just take that away, I think our job is done. We finished the film in October of last year. So a month into our film being done, the landscape that it is being shown in has changed dramatically. So I think just that sense of truly maintaining that belief that our actions matter, and that we can achieve really great things together, no matter if it's a mine going in your backyard or some other kind of environmental or social injustice that's happening in your community.
And for the Indigenous characters, what would you say their hope is for the screening of the film in multiple different places?
Yeah, I mean, I think the very fact of people understanding what's happening in Bristol Bay means a lot to them, as well as understanding that a lot of these extractive projects are coming at great harm to Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities, whether it be the financial participation or consultation in the decisions that are made, or pollution, and those sorts of things. And so I think they are genuinely very grateful that people take the time to watch the film and learn about their way of life, but also the threats that they're facing right now. And I think beyond that, they are doing some really incredible things that, we don't even have time to show in the film, around Indigenous sovereignty, and, setting up life from that Indigenous lens at more of a governmental level for that particular community.
Yeah. And the community here in San Luis Obispo, our Indigenous community, they're the Yakitutu Yaktulini Northern Chumash tribe. And so I know they are heading their own efforts in terms of land back and fighting for their sacred rights to land, and having an opportunity for folks to respect tribal sovereignty. So I just kind of wanted to share that. And you've been here for a long time, so I'm sure you already know as well.
Yeah, I know. I'm so glad you brought that up, because all of these fights are connected. And I actually mentioned the Chumash tribe to our characters. And they said, oh, yeah, we know what's going on over there. We're working with them on land back. And, and so it's these these efforts are connected. But I think also, that is a great takeaway for the audience watching this film, is even though it takes place in Alaska, a lot of the experience of the characters could be seen here with the local tribal communities here as well.
And in terms of how listeners are, I know some of our listeners will be going to the film festival. So folks go to this viewing and they're inspired to take action. What would you recommend that look like? I mean, I know there's a variety of ways this could go, but definitely interested in hearing your thoughts of like how people can further their education and things that they could do to mobilize with our folks who are most impacted.
Yeah, the good news is there's so many, and the bad news is there's so many ways, right? I mean, I'd say first and foremost, like signing up for our newsletter on our website and just kind of just to see the trajectory that the film is going to take, but also as very specific actions come up. Let's say we're fighting a particular bill, or there's a public comment period that we need contributions for. Like we'll be sending out those updates to the people who sign up. So that's kind of number one. There are ways to support the community of Igiagig directly as well that you can access through our site. And just being more conscious of the origin of the materials that are entered into our lives and what happens at the end of the life of those materials is another great just sort of takeaway in the long term. There's definitely going to be developments coming very soon around the fate of Bristol Bay and the Pebble Mine, just due to some very recent political actions that have taken place. And so we really are trying to build a community of support so that when we can activate people around some of those specific actions, that we'll be mightier together.
And may I ask you to please share the site for Unearth for folks who are listening?
Yes. It's unearthfilm.com, and we'll be screening on Monday, April 28th at 7:30 p.m. at the Palm Theater, my very favorite theater in SLO.
And Sky, I hear there's a panel as well?
Yes, Gina's going to be talking a little more about, we're calling it Beyond Entertainment, about impact producing for folks that want to learn more about it. Also for our filmmakers attending, we're really excited about it. And that's going to be Sunday, April 27th at 12 p.m. at our festival lounge, which will be at Edna Contemporary Gallery.
Looking forward to it. I'm Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you will find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find this episode and all our past shows by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival and purchase tickets directly, go to www.slowfilmfest.org and follow along on Instagram and Facebook at Slow Film Fest. And if you want to learn more about Unearth and ways you can get involved with issues of indigenous sovereignty and land back, go to unearthfilm.com. Sky, before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, are there ways that our listeners can engage with International Film Festival and the Slow Film Center to pitch in?
Yeah, so in terms of the film festival, we're always looking for volunteers to help out at our screenings and our events. So you can go on our website, slowfilmfest.org, and there's a volunteer page. You can sign up there. And then for the theater, I mean, I would just say we're always taking feedback suggestions. I think for me and for everyone that works there, we definitely want to play films that people want to see. And there's a lot of films out there, a lot of independent films that never see the light of day. So if there is something you want to see, like, please reach out, as well as we're open to renting the space out, doing split screenings with other nonprofits and benefits and all of that. Post-festival, I need a little bit of a break, but yeah, we would love to partner with other people in that way. And if you feel like there's a film that you really want to bring to our community, we're all ears. So I think that's really important.
And are there sponsorship opportunities still?
We are still seeking just like donations for food and wine and all of that. So if you work in that world, definitely reach out to info@slowfilmfest.org. The greatest thing you can do, though, is I hear time every year, I hear that people don't know that we have a film festival and that we have these incredible films and filmmakers. And I mean, I just met Gina the last year and was like, oh my God, this amazing woman lives in our community and has worked on these incredible films. So please put the word out, let people know. And like I said before, just come to one screening. If you have a little bit of time to slice out, it's a really, really special and unique thing, and I guarantee you'll love it.
Yeah. Let's go to the movies, folks.
Yeah.
And Gina, what advice do you have for emerging filmmakers, especially folks from underrepresented communities and want to get into this world of impact producing?
Well, I'm so moved by Sky that I wanted to say, go to the movies and watch movies.
Yeah.
But it's, in a sense, it's true. I think a lot of, why I got into filmmaking is this curiosity about the world and understanding our place in it and seeing films like the ones that are played at the Slow Film Festival and at the Slow Film Center are a way of doing that. And then beyond that, I mean, just radical connection and collaboration with each other goes a long way. And I remember being a film student and them saying, you know, it's all about networking and not really understanding what that meant other than maybe like schmoozing and exchanging business cards. But I've learned over time that just connecting with other people who have the same passions as you, and goes a long way in just feeling like you're part of a community that can lean on each other and create things together.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to kind of ask about the film festival is just, I'm a new parent I'm thinking about like, what do you do with your kids? Like, and so I just wanted to know if like, are there any like children friendly or kid friendly? Like, is it all kid friendly? Or how would you go about participating if you have children?
Yes. There's definitely some films that are, I think, age appropriate. We do try to, a lot of the indie films are unrated, so they haven't fully gone through the rating process. But we do try to let you know, like, which films are. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. But usually, like, our surf night is great for younger folks. Our skate night, there's a little adult content in the feature film, but it could work for teenagers, actually. It's a great story. So it kind of ranges. I mean, for me, I did go to the Slow Film Festival when I was in high school. It was super, like, life-changing. So we definitely want to involve more folks. And then we have a Filmmakers of Tomorrow competition, our youth competition. These are films made by high schoolers, middle schoolers, and elementary kids from all around the world. But we do have some local students that participate. And that's also a great way, I think, to show kids, like, look what you can do. Like, we've got this animated film that's done with all Legos, and it's absolutely incredible. I think it was done by some elementary students,
wow,
too. So I was very impressed. I'm always, like, amazed at what kids can do.
And Gina, do you have any closing thoughts for our folks who are listening?
I think that people in San Luis Obispo really should come out to the festival. I think I've traveled to many different film festivals with films that I've worked on and just as a spectator. And it really is life-changing to sit in a theater with a group of people all experiencing the same, you know, emotions and learning things along the way. And the fact that we have that in San Luis Obispo is really special. So come out and see the films.
And how about you, Sky?
Yeah, I think she stole what I was going to say. But I think, like, it's really, I'm really proud of this program we've put together. We spent a lot of time putting something in there for everyone, really. I think there's just such a diverse range of topics that, I mean, we've kind of even expanded on our genre and horror a little bit to try to bring people that enjoy those kinds of films. So we've really made an effort there. I think there's also some really great events that we have this year. Some incredible, we're honoring Jay Duplass, who's like huge in the indie film world. Definitely don't miss out on it. And the filmmakers are so excited to meet people here on the Central Coast. So if you see them, say hi, talk to them, and come out and see their movie.
Yeah. And one thing that I didn't want to add to this all was just that, you know, in terms of how the events have been, the reputation that the SLO International Film Festival has garnered, do you mind, for folks who may have just joined in late, kind of describing, like, what are the biggest hits, or like, what are your favorite memories from these years that you've been organizing?
I think for me personally, and when I came involved in it, I just wanted to expand on more community outreach. So I think now we've done this program with Race Matters for a little over 5 years now. It's this year it's Pay What You Want, with donations going to Race Matters and the work they're doing. Really proud of that program and where it's come and how they have continued to grow it and become curators of it. We've also we're the top 50 coolest film festivals Ooh. In the world from Movie Maker Magazine. We just also got recognized by the Academy as a Academy Award qualifying film festival for best documentary shorts. So the short that wins this year will be eligible to be nominated for an Oscar, which is a huge accolade. Wow. And then we just got voted also top USA best film festivals. So yeah, in your neighborhood you have this like world-class festival.
What an impact you've made on our community, Sky. Thanks. I mean, from having grown up in Templeton, right, to now having like an award winning film festival.
Yeah.
And I came here again 2010 and didn't know anything about the film festival. But I've gone every year since, since 2019, 2020?
Yeah.
And I can't recommend it enough for our listeners.
Thank you. I try not to think about it too much. Yeah, it's pretty surreal.
And thank you again, Gina, for joining us. I really appreciate you making the time and sharing all your expertise and all the wonderful things you've done in your career.
Thank you. It feels great to be even more connected with the community. And I look forward to seeing people at the screening of Unearth on the 28th.
Sky and Gina, thank you both for sharing with us. And I am so deeply appreciative of the art and craft that goes into filmmaking, and not even just filmmaking, but organizing dozens of films for an entire community. It really does make our community here in San Luis Obispo a little bit brighter. Every year is something to look forward to. To our listeners, thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope that you'll tune in the next time on Central Coast Voices on Thursday, April 10th at 1 p.m. Host Fred Monroe will be discussing the evolving role of human services nonprofit agencies with local leaders, including Elizabeth Steinberg of Community Action Partnership San Luis Obispo. Central Coast Voices is co-produced by the show's hosts in collaboration with KCBX and supported by the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo. We depend on folks like you to continue these programs, so please donate today or become a member with your monthly donation online at www.kcbx.org. I'm your host, Dr. Mario Espinosa-Kulik. Thanks for joining us.